so dynamic, so magnetic, so effervescent, so full of energy and vitality.
Is it Herman?
No.
Is it Sherman?
No.
Is it Eddie? Is it Freddie?
Oh, no, no, no.
Is it Hart? Is it Schaffner? Is it Marx, perhaps?
Oh, you'll never, never guess it. Don't snap your cap.
It's just Miss Judy Garland.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to Talk Tuesday. For this Talk Tuesday, I'm going to talk some about some of the changes that are happening to our YouTube channel. And we'll close out by having an interview that I did with Mindy, who does my Judy Garland intros and my Big Show intros. And she and I are going to be doing something new that I'm going to talk about in just a minute. But that interview with her will discuss some of her background, talk about Judy, talk about a lot of things. It's about an hour and a half interview, so you listen to as much as you want or watch as much as you want on YouTube here. Anyway, the changes we're making this week, well, usually on Sunday nights, we present a Jack Benny show with our team chatting about it, and it starts at 7 o'clock Eastern or Pacific. Our Talk Tuesday that we added a few weeks ago, and this is our third one, is on Tuesdays, and it airs again at 7 and 4, 4 o'clock Pacific, of course, 7 Eastern. And the same thing is going to be happening. I'm going to be adding Walt Disney Wednesday, where my daughter and I are going to chat about Walt Disney and be bringing you the early seasons of the Walt Disney Show from the 1950s. And so that will be fun as well. And Mindy and I on Fridays are going to start bringing us again at 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern. We'll be bringing you the Judy Garland television show. Now, this week, we'll be presenting the very first kind of pilot for it. It was a special that they did a year earlier, and you could see a lot of the sets stay the same and things into her television show, but it was so popular. It was, it got a 49 share, which was huge. The biggest special that they'd ever done, the most popular special that they'd ever done, next to, of course, The Wizard of Oz and things they'd present. But for a new special with new material, it was the biggest they'd ever done. And so that's why it led to the Judy Garland television series. Anyway, there's part of this series that we talk about, or part of this first special that is really cool. It's with the special features Judy Garland, Dean Martin, and Frank Sinatra. And there's this one piece where Frank's done performing and Judy goes up and greets him. And then she starts singing a little transition song and walks over and greets Dean Martin. And it's so touching to see how much they care about each other and everything. It just really comes across. And so I'm presenting that little piece, and then we'll slide right into the interview with Mindy and I chatting about Judy Garland. So if you like our interview and you'd like to see more of that sort of thing, then tune in on Friday nights and you'll get a chance to see us do a shorter little 15-minute, 10-minute piece before each show, where we talk about who's going to be on it and what that show is going to cover and things. So it should be fun for you. So make sure you're tuning in, and we'll see you folks next time for more Talk Tuesday.
That's for being so good. Oh, you're so good. You're so good.
You enjoyed it?
Oh, yes, I did.
You liked it?
I loved it.
Good.
You do something to me. Something that simply mystifies me. Tell me, what can it be? You have the power to hypnotize me. You do so well, are you?
You look marvelous.
I think he looks terrible.
You look marvelous.
Tough for you, Mary.
I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here too, Judy. Where are you going?
Well, I thought I'd just go and get my fan.
No, you come here.
Oh, how marvelous.
It's something I want you to hear, and you'll be listening?
Every word.
Honest? Mm-hmm. Promise?
I swear.
Okay. You must have been a beautiful baby.
All right. Well, hello, podcast listeners, and maybe YouTubers. I don't know if I'm putting this out there on YouTube or not. But this is Buck Benny, and of course, I have the Buck Benny podcast, and we also do the Judy Garland and Friends podcast, and I'm here with Mindy. Mindy has been with me, I don't know, what, 5 years now? Six, seven? I don't know.
Oh, my goodness. It would be almost that long. It would probably be close to five now. Yeah.
It's been quite a while. And anyway, and so I thought, let's interview Mindy, and we'll throw it on there in the podcasts and things, and maybe throw it out there on YouTube, like I say, and just talk about Mindy and Judy Garland, because she does all my Judy Garland intros. She's done, I believe, really close to 100 of them, if not more. And we have literally like five or six left. So we'll cut this interview and kind of throw it on there. And so you'll hear us at the beginning of probably mostly Bing Crosby, because it's who she appears on the most, especially definitely at this time point in her career. There might be a couple other things, but mostly Bing Crosby. But anyway, I thought we'd start with Mindy by saying, so Mindy, how did you kind of, when we talked initially, we were talking about different things you could do, and you were kind of attracted to doing Judy. And I was just wondering, how do you remember getting into Judy? Was it through Wizard of Oz, like so many of us did, or how did that go for you?
Yeah, 100% Wizard of Oz. It was always, I believe in our, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been so long, but when I was a little kid, I felt like it was on at Halloween every year. It was like a yearly thing.
It was a yearly thing at Halloween.
Right, and they didn't release it on video for a long time after kind of videos were prevalent.
Correct.
That I remember anyway. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was a kind of a yearly occurrence. I just loved her. And I was obsessed with just the way she talked, the way she sang, and the movie itself, the story. It was just such a perfect blend of all of those things. I would kind of just love later. I loved being in theater, and I'm not much of a singer, but I would always try to imitate her. And then
well, come on, give us a song. Let's hear.
No. Oh, no. No, I'm not singing.
Yesterday, all my problems seem so far away.
Yeah. No way. So, not with allergies on top of not having talent. No way. But
as you were saying, the shows were every November, like right around Thanksgiving time when we were kids. I mean, when, you know, from in the 70s and 80s and so forth. But I do think it started actually with the radio show, with the Lux that she did in 1950. You did an intro for the Lux that when she did Wizard of Oz on that show. And I believe they started showing that, playing that radio show every year at, think it was Christmas time that they did that one. And then eventually, when they got the rights, and because originally they wouldn't show a big movie like that on TV, they just show like B movies and westerns and stuff.
Right.
But eventually, maybe in the 60s-ish time frame, they started showing Wizard of Oz. All in when it was first on, it was only in black and white, so there you didn't get the whole impression of your black and white color, it was just black and white.
Yeah,
but then eventually, when color TVs became the thing, then that became one of the big things that they would do is say, oh, and now in living color, we have Wizard of Oz, you know. So, so that's kind of segued, I think, from radio into television from the original, which is great.
That's interesting, yeah. And that, I mean, it's such a perfect movie to really sell the color TV concept, that just just the vibrancy of Oz, and even she herself, she was just very, the color schemes that they chose were so deliberate and so perfect. It was just a beautiful movie.
It really made that Technicolor pop. Yeah,
right. I agree. Right.
Well, so, and a lot of us thought it was, I did, thought it was the very first color movie ever, and like, mm-hmm. like this was introducing color, but the reality is there'd been many other color movies. It just used color and black and white in a way that right. no other movie, well, I don't think any other movie before nor up to the present day has ever used black and white going into mm-hmm. color the way it did and so dramatically, right?
That's true. I'm so drawn to older movies, and I hadn't watched a lot of them up until your podcast and being drafted into that. It was like every month it was a new star. It was the Gene Kelly month, and it was the Jimmy Stewart month, and it was the Katharine Hepburn. I could not get enough of the older movies, black and white, but also the color, because I felt like in the black and white they knew how to use the shadows. Yes. And the shadows and the lighting became part of the storytelling that even in black and white movies, when they use that technique today, they don't always quite get it. Like,
right. they essentially film a color movie, but in black and white. And it's like,
right.
no, you really need, you're going to black and white. You need right. to emphasize that and play with the shadows and everything.
Yeah.
Well, Hitchcock did it so well in yes. his films. And he's one that when you mention Jimmy Stewart, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, there so many of these stars were in some of his movies, and when you watch them, you're just like, wow, that is really impressive. Or
yeah.
certainly Orson Welles' Citizen Kane, if you ever watched that, that it just pops. I mean, the yeah. it would be a horror show if they tried to colorize that film. So
I don't even know why you would, because I feel, first of all, I mean, that's pretty consistently ranked as the best movie of all time.
Yeah.
At least class movie. Yeah, and there was an Orson Welles month. Sure. And I just felt like I had a huge cultural ignorance going on when I first started. Like, I've only seen like a handful of these movies and these people. And I was a fan of what I had seen, but I just hadn't seen a lot. But anyway, with Citizen Kane, I just feel like you cannot have the story in color. I don't know why. It just would not work.
No. And he just told it so well. The other thing is, because I think it benefits from this in a way that no other film ever has or probably ever will, because he came from, one, he came from the stage first, so you take that in. Mm-hmm. Then he was in radio for years mm-hmm. before he did that movie. And I think sound in that film is so unique. You have people talking over each other, which you mm-hmm. never usually do in film, that crosstalk. You have where they'll be walking and they'll walk into the rain, and then you'll hear the rain or the wind, and you won't hear their voices so well, just like you would in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's because in most movies, you can follow the character from walking outside the house into the car, sitting in the, close the door. The sound never changes. It's like they got the mic right on them the whole time. And in reality, right. that's not how life works. And so right. hearing it the way life works, where when mm-hmm. they turn away from you, their voice gets softer, and when they turn towards the camera, the voice gets louder. It just gives it that sense of realism that most films just don't have to that extent. Mm-hmm. And so the visual, the sound, I mean, my mm-hmm. gosh, that's incredible. That film.
That's a very good point, because that's something that always jars me in movies, where it's like all this money and all this technology that they have today, the sound gets so weird. Well, they've clearly thought they needed to add a line, and so you're seeing people from a little bit of a distance as the scene fades out, and then you know it goes from like what was clearly obviously an outdoor conversation where there's a little bit of air around them to a very closed in, very tight, like what are you doing?
Exactly.
The whole night long movie, just reshoot it.
Yeah.
or you
get the actors and it's on them the whole time they're talking mm-hmm. and then they turn away to walk somewhere. And you can mm-hmm. tell they added the dialogue because they say something else when they're mm-hmm. not facing the camera or anything.
Right.
It's like, oh, we can put the line in here. And you're like, well, that's pretty obvious because you haven't done that in the whole rest of the show. It's
right. It's just so frustrating and jarring. And I feel like they, what, and things like, to this day, think the tornado in The Wizard of Oz is, it holds up. I love campy disaster movie. I love the 70s disaster genre movie. I love that stuff. I love Twister.
My birthday was like last week.
Oh, happy birthday.
And thank you. And for my birthday, you know, my family will put up with me watching anything so I can watch whatever I want. So I chose to watch The Poseidon Adventure.
Yes.
And I chose to watch Towering Infernos.
Yes, yeah. I love those.
I had a disaster day.
I love it. Especially now, because you feel like, well, at least we're not upside down in the ocean. It feels better.
It could be worse.
It feels better. But yeah, I feel like they had to be so inventive because they did not have the computer wizardry to make that happen. They had to really craft this world in a lot of worlds in the 30s, 40s, 50s. And some of the silent movies, I watched a few of those and I was just stunned by how captivating it was because they had so little tools at their disposal. They had to use that lighting, that set, that effect. And that's why I think horror movies they're like ghost movies from the 50s and 60s. I think they're much, much creepier than the constant like demon looking thing going up the camera.
Blood shooting everywhere.
They just go straight for the gore and it becomes very much, they call it torture porn, which I'm not into any of that.
For me, suspense is the thing.
That's
the part where it gets your body all into it and the whole thing. Whereas the gore stuff is just like, oh, that's gross. And it's not.
It doesn't
make me go, I'm scared. It just makes me go, my gosh, how did they get that guy to squirt so much blood?
that's exactly it, because I love watching the sci-fi, the like really Sharknado and whatever their stupid stuff is. But I love it because it's so ridiculous on purpose that you can just go back and be, oh my gosh, how'd they do that and not laugh? But then the serious ones, you watch the same thing, you're like, how did they not laugh through that? Because that's so clearly fake or so clearly gross.
Well, there's the outtakes, and it took them 12 times to get the guy not to laugh.
Right, right.
No, we got to clean up the set again. Okay, let's do it again.
Exactly. Yeah, because there is... this may be way off topic, but I think it's called...
And we've been so on topic so far.
What's the... who are we talking about?
Tornadoes and sharks.
Tornadoes, right.
Well, I guess Sharknado relates to...
that's true, in my mind.
Sharks in it, but she did have a bicycle and so forth.
there's a yellow brick road. A yellow brick road connects all of these, I promise. Yes. But no, it's... I think it was The House on Haunted Hill where they are paid to be in... It's like a psychological experiment. They're paid to be in this house that's haunted.
Yes.
And they're actually, anyway, that might be a spoiler, but one of the effects from the original is the door, the two ladies are like scared, and so they're in each other in one of the ladies' rooms, and the door is literally being like pushed in by whatever forces on the other side. And I've seen like the remakes of that, and I liked them because they were cheesy or whatever. But I was so obsessed with that door because it's clearly not CGI. And I actually read some of the trivia. It was a rubber door, pants looked like wood, and they had, you know, production crew pushing this thing to make it look like it was. I'm like, that's awesome. That's the craft of movie making I really like.
I had forgotten I was going to change my background and have it be this background. Right. Now I'm ready for Judy and Dorothy and the whole thing.
I'm representing black, gray, white, because I don't tan, and you're representing.
You're postmodern, and I'm the color. I'm the colorized version.
Yes. I'm for 30s era. You're that's still 30s.
That's still 30s. 39.
39.
Yeah.
You're on the verge of her color era.
And that's another one. I mean, Wizard of Oz is just so amazing to watch and just enjoy the scenery, enjoy the art, just the craftsmanship that went into that film is just crazy. And the production value, it's wonderful to see. So watch that film, Kevin. But let's switch gears. And let's talk about how first you got into my podcast. So what happened, for those of you who don't know Mindy's history or my history of how this all worked, I will tell you what it was, and then Mindy will correct me if I'm wrong. But I believe what happened is I had asked any of my listeners that wanted to be guest podcast folks to, because I thought, okay, instead of just hearing my voice, it'd be nice to hear some other voices introducing some of the shows, that they could write me and say that they'd be interested in doing this. Well, Mindy's friend Stacy was a listener, and she wrote in that she had her own little podcast that she did, one on literature, I believe, and that she'd be maybe interested in doing an intro or two for me. So I had her do a couple of intros as part of her showing me that she could do an intro, or was, you know, because I didn't want people to crash and burn doing an intro. She sent me links to her podcast to see that she could do it in her voice and all that. Well, in part of listening to that, Mindy was a guest very frequently on Stacy's podcast. And so I heard I heard Mindy's voice and Mindy and Stacy together and what their banter was. And I really liked that. And so I said, could we ask Mindy if she would join us? And I believe Stacy approached Mindy, which would be completely weird getting approached from the outside to do something like this. And then maybe you could take it from there. So how did she approach you on this, or how did that go from there?
I have to admit, I didn't know much about podcasts to the point of when she wanted to do the literature one. I said, you know, for a podcast, what exactly are they? And she explained, I'm like, you want me to play radio and talk about books? Like, sure, that's cool. I didn't know what was going on. And it was really soon after. I think she had already been listening to your show, because she and her family are, they have the collection. They have, you know, all, they love the old movies. And I watched quite a few there long before any of this, and that was always fun. But anyway, she said, kind of explained your show, and I said, oh yeah, I've heard a couple of old time shows, you know, I didn't really have a lot of exposure to it. And then she's like, well, he's kind of wanting both of us to do intro, and I'm like, do you know this guy? I was trying to be like, she's older than me, but I'm just like,
he sounds like a stalker.
I was like, do you know this guy? We've got to like meet him or something. She's like, no, it's all online. I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's fine then. There's no danger. But that was my first thought. Like, who is this guy, Stacy? And then, yeah, but then it's, I listen to some of the shows and I'm like, oh, that's really fun. That's, especially the music. I really love the music. And yeah. And then I think one of the ones I listened to was actually, George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Yes.
I don't know what their show was called. I'm blanking Burns on that, Allen. But what was it?
Creative title, Burns and Allen.
Oh, right. You think I would know that. And then I think a couple of the Lucille Ball ones, and I was like, oh, it was The Suspense. Cause I really love the Suspense series. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, this is really fun. We should do this. She was already convinced and like had me signed up. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. She's like, oh yeah, we're doing it. She's like, we're done.
And you guys were so much fun together with you guys talking and everything. That was fantastic.
Thanks.
And then I really liked your voice and your input that you had in things. And so after a while, I decided, I think, to try and separate you guys and just see how you did on your own stuff. And she took on Jimmy Stewart shows, I think, and you were kind of leaning towards Judy. And so we had Judy, and you just took off on the Judy things. You had research. I mean, you do better intros than I do by far.
Oh, please. That's not true, but thank you.
I love your intros. I love them.
Thank you.
I mean, I've had a lot of guest intro folks, and I listen to a lot of their intros because, you know, I want to listen to them, but also you know, I get busy and there's a lot of things I always listen to your intros every single time.
Thank you. That's nice.
They were wonderful, wonderful. Well, it shows how much I like them because I had them over on the Jack Benny podcast. And then I said, these are just buried over here and Judy fans are not ever going to find them. So I'm like, okay, I have to create a whole nother podcast called Judy Garland and Friends, which I wanted to do anyway, because it was a great place to play like suspense episodes and Lux Radio Theater and anything that has big name stars. Cause I'm going, okay, Judy, I know she doesn't necessarily know all the stars in Hollywood, but this is a great place for me to call it Judy Garland and Friends and play her shows with your intros on them, plus shows of a lot of other Hollywood stars. And it's gone really well over there. I just feel really strange that I always wonder how you feel, because you sort of created these shows on the fly for me, and now they're like the main draw or the main thing of this Judy Garland podcast. And is it weird to think that things that you did 3, 4, 5 years ago are going around and people are listening to them weekly? And, or is that, I don't know, how does that make you feel?
You know, I never thought, I guess, a whole lot about it. I was always surprised when anybody, because there were a few people that reached out, was just so nice, and said, you know, how much they liked the intros themselves. And I was just shocked that anybody listened, because I, when you're in your room by yourself, staring at a wall, smiling at the wall so you sound happier, and like talking about things that you're kind of like geeking out about, and you're like, does anybody listen to this part, or do we just fast forward?
So at least that's, I do.
well, and a couple other people, but at least. But
yeah, we've got our few listeners. It's good.
Yeah, it's just nice that if anybody, I guess, listens to it, because I felt like there's so much that Stacey's brother is notorious for this, at least with me, of reading something and saying, you got to read this, so I have somebody to talk to about it. And I felt kind of the same way with the intros, like, oh, it's so good, I hope somebody like listens to it and feels XYZ or thinks it's really interesting that this was happening behind the scenes.
That's exactly why I started doing the podcast, because
okay.
With Jack, I felt like I need somebody to talk to about Jack. I so love Jack Benny. And there just was nobody who really knew. You'd mention him and be like, oh yeah, wasn't he a guy from years ago? You know, no one.
Yeah.
And I checked to see, okay, is anybody doing a podcast? I'd love to hear someone talk about him. And there just wasn't anything. So I started doing the intros for the Jack Benny show. I feel the same way about Judy. I feel like there's these people that love Judy and watch all mm-hmm. her movies and have seen her television show, but have no clue that she was ever did radio, and she did a ton of radio. And I think her radio mm-hmm. work, in a lot of cases, is better than some of the work she did in television. She's younger, mm-hmm. she's, you know, and I just think you capture that spirit of what you want Judy to be more on the radio yeah. shows than anything else, because she's this talented, funny, witty person that can sing beautifully, and mm-hmm. it's captured so well, especially on the Bing Crosby shows. I really mm-hmm. think his banter mix was it's a perfect mix of the two people, and I just love them together. And then when Bob Hope stops by and the three of them are together, it's pretty wonderful. So yeah. I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing this for us. It's been a joy.
Well, thanks for thank you. Because I really, there were, that came along right at a very, very unhealthy situation for me physically. I was going through a couple of things, and it was really the only thing that I felt I had enough energy to be creative and like enjoy something and then go back to reality later. But it was kind of, in some ways, therapeutic to, you know, obviously anytime you read into Judy Garland, there's all of the sad, but then to know those stories or to read more about what she was going through, and then to hear how she turned it on and could power through it to give a good show or to show up for a friend when Bing needed her and yeah. the post or whatever. It's like, well, you know, yeah, I'm not a celebrity worshiper by like I don't get into a lot of stuff, but I felt like she, and I think this is her universal appeal. There is something so unvarnished about her. Somebody could be so professional, so talented, and never really miss, but then you have this sense that it's wide open, that everybody knows her flaws, she knew that they knew, and yeah. there was still so much love there that she allowed herself to be vulnerable yeah. with people, and but still contribute in a meaningful way. I don't know. That might be a little too. I have a psychology degree, and that might be a little too Freudy.
I'm couching, a school counselor, but, so it all makes sense to me.
But it just spoke to me. There were certain usually songs are what will make me cry, but there were certain storylines that they did where I would just tear up. So I'm like, yeah, I feel that. I get that. Because so much of what I was listening to was kind of designed to perk up, you know, the troops overseas in World War II,
yes.
Which was horrifying. And, you know, how do you make it better? And they just spent a lot of effort trying. And it just, universal themes came through. I think that could be applied at any time.
I think especially you're right.
Now, in our own little,
and with her, I think one of the reasons that so many people are still impacted by Judy's story and Judy's life is that horrendous things happened to her, and a lot of them weren't of her doing. They were other mm-hmm. people doing it to her, telling from the time she was a young child, saying, take these pills, they'll make you go get up for the performance. Oh, now you're too excited, we're gonna give you some pills to calm you down, and we're gonna mm-hmm. So they essentially were taking this child and making this child into a drug addict in so many ways. And her going through her life and dealing with these situations and having issues in marriages, issues in lots of things, but the show must go on sort of thing mm-hmm. tied in with, as she went on, she was trying to do her best for her kids and trying to, you can empathize with so much of her life mm-hmm. that I think that's why so many people are drawn to it. And she showed you can overcome things. And I think that's what resonates. And I think you doing all the podcasts and us following her on journey from when the earliest podcast, I think mm-hmm. she's like 15, 14, I don't know, she's young. And then up into the last ones in the early 1950s, or she's mm-hmm. in her 30s at that point. And her career, unfortunately, I mean, I think she thinks her career is kind of starting to take off again, which it mm-hmm. is in the performance in the concert area. But as far as film goes, I really think she thought, and a lot of us thought, that when she did A Star is Born, that mm-hmm. was going to be her new launching thing. It's a wonderful film, but it didn't get her. And then all of a sudden, it's 10 years later, and she hasn't done a film until basically Judgment at Nuremberg, which is a totally different kind of role for her.
Right.
Yeah. And she just was trying to jump into a different mm-hmm. setting, and she did a beautiful job of it. And again, Hollywood didn't come calling for other roles like Nuremberg.
Right.
So to me, it just feels so sad for her in that she's trying to do these things. She's given so much of herself, mm-hmm. and it feels like they're just giving up on her and saying, mm-hmm. you're done. Unless there's something that's perfect for you and we really need you, then we'll use you for that one film. But then that doesn't mean we're ever going to use you again. It's like,
because it is sad, because I feel that if you or any kind of, I think what I found so interesting at the very beginning, Stacey and I were doing Lucille Ball, I almost said the redhead.
The redhead. Famous redhead, yeah.
Yeah. And you were just, you know, kind of curious if there were maybe modern feminist type themes that we, or if we, how we interpreted the humor of the 50s, kind of typical housewife, you know, bumbling housewife kind of thing that got flipped on its head over the years. But I think with Judy, there's something, she has three main careers. I think a lot of people I've read kind of agree with that. It's, you know, the child star, the young adult, where the Vincent Minnelli, he just was so in love with who she was and what she looked like that he kind of let her grow up where the studio was holding her back.
Right.
And then what you're talking about, as far as her movie career goes, she's has this, you know, A Star is Born.
And you're talking about like the Minnelli time frame when he was Easter Parade, that sort of thing, right?
Exactly, where it was just a very glamorized and her makeup was changed to be a little more mature. And she was allowed to be, you know, a sexy woman versus the talented kid.
Right.
And then, but then this A Star is Born and Judgment, she was allowed to be an actress. And I think, I mean, there's music in A Star is Born, but that is just a phenomenal performance. And I don't think in modern times, a star like that, first of all, would have been treated like that. First of all, there's like probably a lot of laws that would have prevented what happened to her in the beginning, but she would have had so much clout. She would have been her own industry, like a Taylor Swift or a Beyonce, where it's nobody messes with them.
Exactly.
There's lawyers, there's handlers, there's people that will, they decide what their career looks like. And she did not, no matter how much talent she threw at the screen, they did not let her do really what she could have done and wanted to do. And it was just frustrating. There's so much untapped potential.
Well, I think you're right. I think so many of the movies she's in and the things she does, you watch them and you go, if Judy wasn't in this, I wouldn't be watching this. Yep. Because the level of the show, it's B movie with Judy, who's just acts beyond what you should expect in that performance. And so you can watch nearly any movie that she's ever in and just be enamored with her performance in that film, no matter what the other actors were doing or no matter what the script was like or anything. And then when you came across a script like, and a production like Wizard of Oz, like Easter Parade, she blossoms even more. It's like she hits a whole nother stage and it's a stage that you just don't see any other performers maybe even reach that level ever. Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's just crazy.
She was just extraordinary.
Yeah.
Because they talk about generational talent, which she was, but it's like a century talent. Like, yes. There's it's so rare.
Well, like you said, if she was born 50 years later, 40 years later, what would her career have been like? And and I like how you were comparing her to Taylor Swift and the NBA, because I do think she'd have that kind of a career. It would just, well, and even now, almost nobody has a true movie career and recording career. Usually it's one or the other, and they might dabble in the other. But for her, it truly was that she was extraordinary talented singer. I mean, one of the best singers of all time, and an extraordinary talented actress, one of the best of all time. So, and you just, I can't think of anybody else with those two things going that I'd put in the same level as her. There's just nobody.
Exactly. And I by no means meant to compare the singing talents of those people with her, but it's just or even somebody like Barbara Streisand, who kind of bridged that gap into the megastar.
Yeah, I guess that would be the closest one I could think of, would be Barbara to her.
Yeah, where it's just so much of what she wanted to do, she did, and everybody followed suit, and whether or not she was always nice about it is up for debate, but at the same time, there was, I think, people like Judy, they were the I don't think by any means the last of the talents that got abused over the years, but she is always looked back on with all the talent and all the success and all the amazing things she accomplished. She still is one of those people, I think, made it better for people that came after her because they saw what happened with her.
Yes.
And it's like, you can have that phenomenal of a talent and people just not care.
Yeah.
Because she's not thin enough. So give her this pill and don't let her eat. And it's ridiculous. Like I think she would be thrilled to death to see how many different types of people get seen solely because of their talent, because of what they look like.
You did a great job there of segueing us into talking about the Judy movie that we both watched recently, because it does have her as a youth dealing with the head of the studio and the pressure it shows him putting on her to be ready and perform, and her just trying to do whatever she can to wiggle out and be a normal person and just be like, I should be able to jump in this pool if I want to jump in the pool. I should be able to do these things. And I'm just going to do these things, even though right now it makes no sense for me to do them. I want to do it just because they're not letting me do it.
Right.
And then with the folks just thinking that she's essentially a piece of equipment, a tool, whatever, they need to do this thing. So she's my hammer. So we use the hammer and then put the hammer away. We don't care. We don't have to take care of the hammer. We don't do anything. I just need it when I need it. And right. She's a human being, and she just wants to be respected as that human being and have some say into her career. And they're just like, well, the hammer doesn't tell me it wants to do something else.
Right. Yeah.
So that's how that part feels. And until this moment that we're talking, that's why I love talking to you, because you always give me great insights. And when I listen to you on the podcast, because until this moment, I was thinking that movie really didn't need that earlier part. People already knew that and things, and that we, it should have only had the later part, because it just has these flashbacks to the earlier section. And I don't think that actress captures Judy as well as Renee Zellweger does in the, as the adult Judy. But I think about it now, I think that was good to have that part. I think it was good to show this is what mm-hmm. we, this is the formation of where she, this is why at the end she has so much difficulty, and it allows mm-hmm. us to sympathize and empathize mm-hmm. instead of judge. And I think that's part of what makes that movie work so well. What do you think about the earlier scenes right. of the movie? And,
yeah, because I remember we briefly emailed about that, because I was torn about that, but that's a very good point, because I felt like it was necessary to show she wasn't just a random alcoholic. Like, they literally created the right. issues that she ended up having. Not that she was perfect and maybe didn't have her own demons outside of all of that, but she was abused very early on and continuously. And I think it was, and not to, the actress is lovely. She didn't look like Judy to me, and she didn't have that vibrancy through the pain thing right. that Judy did. And
I'll throw this out there. I don't know of anybody who could really portray a young Judy correctly. I mean, she was a right. one of a kind young. Old Judy, there's multiple actresses who could probably pull that off. She pulled it off beautifully, and she deserved the award she won for it. Right. But the younger actors, I have to give a pass, because I think you could do casting on that for a year and a half and not find the right person.
Right, and I was going to say exactly that, because I think the young actress, I think she's a very good actress. It's just, I think, an impossible role. I think she did as well as anybody would have done, because it's just so hard. And part of it too, because young Judy Garland is so iconic. And I think they took a risk to even show that part because of that issue. It's very hard to take somebody so, because you can have these biography films where, you know, Jamie Foxx kind of looks like Ray Charles, because you don't really, I mean, you knew what he looked like, but he wasn't like such a yearly yeah. event that you looked at him, or people still dress up like him for Halloween. Like, that's one of the most iconic looking people of all time. And it's, your brain is so focused on every little detail in her face and every way she talks, and it's so unfair to that actress, but it would have
been the other thing that's unfair too, is in that whole movie, that section of going back, and I mean, we go back there a number of times at mm-hmm. different parts of the movie to see kind of how Judy came to be who she is. But if you add all those pieces up, it's probably not more than 20-25 minutes of film.
How
much can you as an actress get across in that right. screen time?
Right.
It's just a little homage or a little taste right. of the past.
That's a very good point, and that triggered for me, so thank you. Like, one of the issues I had, and that probably is part of it, where you see her so briefly at that age that it's jarring to go from the current story they're telling back to the very important flashback, and most of it was true what they showed, or at least documented by witnesses. And you don't get to sit in there long enough to really let her portray what is going on. So the fact that we're talking about her means she did enough of a good job that she
right
you know well and saying it was valid to have her there.
One scene that really affected me, and stupid that affected me, I guess, but it just felt frustrating to me, because it's a scene where I believe Mickey Rooney is in the scene with her, and he's eating a hamburger, I think, and she's got a burger, and you can see how much she wants to eat that burger and mm-hmm. how much she wants to eat just a few fries or whatever. And the lady that she has in charge of her just will not let her, just refuses. No, of course you can't have that. You can't, you know, because they have it on a strict diet and the whole thing.
Right. And
to not let somebody, even once when you see that on their face of, yeah, go ahead, just have a couple fries or have, you know.
Right.
And it's like, no, I just cannot do, the hammer wants to eat some fries. I'm not going to let my hammer eat fries. It's not going to be as good of a hammer or work as well after that.
Right. So,
and it's just like, she's a human being. And it just, it shows you how much they robbed her humanity from her as a young child.
That's exactly right. And then at the same exact time, the reason the hamburger was even there, because it was a photo op to show that they were trying to sell the story that she and Mickey were dating, and yes, they weren't. So the fact that the food was real, but it was not meant for her. It was a prop to sell the story of this love life that she was not allowed to have, right, and was completely fictional. And it was, they did that with a lot of people. They created those fake, personal lives for them, yes, or whatever. But to really, I'm glad they showed that, because I think that's an element of her personal story that people didn't know, because she is so beautiful, and she was so just a shapely young girl. Like, she doesn't come off as somebody who has a massive weight problem. But in their eyes, she was not perfect and beautiful, and so food was not allowed for her. Right. Like, it just makes you just stick to your stomach.
Well, it also rubbed you a little bit that it gave you a little insight into Mickey wasn't held to the same standard. He could do things and eat things and do what he was going to do.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be telling him not to do it. And then on top of that, it made you understand. So I guess that section was, the movie was better than I gave it credit for, because gave me an insight into he and her that I hadn't had before, where it's mm-hmm. like, it felt, they did a really good job of making it feel like he cared for her kind of like a little sister or something. She kind of wanted a relationship with him, maybe, but that was not even on his radar, really. And that also, the other piece I got that I thought was good in that is that he really wasn't like aware of the trouble. It's like, he didn't have those troubles she had. He didn't. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the same issues, and so he didn't see them in her, and he didn't really invest time. He came in, he'd act the scene, he'd be with her, he'd joke around with her or whatever, and then he was off mm-hmm. to live his life with his other people and other women that he's with and so forth. And so I don't think he even really realized how impacted she was at the time.
Yeah, and in his defense, it was so ingrained, that kind of, and I'll just say the word, that kind of sexism was so ingrained in culture and in their industry, that it would, of course she wouldn't eat. She's a girl. She's got to watch her weight. She's got to watch her figure. She's in movies. Like, it wouldn't have ever phased him where he could gain 40 pounds and they would be like, okay, we'll just write a movie about that. You know, it was that was the double standard. And so it probably would not have registered as something that maybe should have been addressed, in his defense, which sounds apologist, but I don't mean it to be. It's just, that's just the way that it was back then.
I agree. I think it's really impressive that we've talked for probably 25 minutes about 25 minutes of the film.
We'll just start reenacting.
I don't think any of the producers or anything sat down and said, I wonder if someone's going to analyze the flashback scenes for. We did it. And
because it's Judy. They should have known.
Yes.
But they should have known.
Let's get to the meat of the movie, though.
Okay.
Renee, I remember when we both knew when she was, that she had gotten the part. Mm-hmm. And it was back when, I mean, this shows how long it's been. It was back when you were doing the podcast and everything.
Right.
And you mentioned her a few times in the podcast, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we both were like, I don't know if this is going to work. It doesn't seem right for this or whatever.
Right.
But man, she just ripped it apart and nailed it. I very quickly, two or three scenes in, I just felt like I was watching, it was like, here's Judy brought to life.
Yes.
They filmed this. Somehow they went back yes. in time and filmed this, and this is what happened. Mm-hmm. And certainly a young person that they did cast totally correctly was her daughter. That's in one scene. She just completely seemed like, there she, Liza Minnelli. It's young Liza yeah. Minnelli right there. And I was wishing, I'm going, I hope she'll come back, but like, I think she had one scene or two scenes, but she,
yeah.
she was Liza. And I was just like, wow, they really cast that well. But just seeing that, just staying with, I see, the movie was not at all what I expected. I expected more True. Of a, maybe it started in the 50s and go to the end of her life. But really, it's a story of, the crux of it is maybe 6 months in her life or a year. I mean, it's a very short time frame.
I think it said 6 weeks, what I read.
Oh, maybe yeah. 6 weeks. Yeah. I mean, it was like, it was, we're yeah, very, basically, yeah, yeah. she's with her kids and things, and then she has to go make some money, and they get mm-hmm. her a job over in England. And so she goes over there, and then it's about what she does there, and then she dies right after that. So,
right.
yeah. And then gets married right in the middle of that mess.
You know, and I actually wrote that down. I'm like, I don't remember this. I don't remember that. Like, I don't remember this guy. Who's this? I thought they made that up because he was an attractive guy or something. Yeah. Like, what's this about? But I wrote it down and looked it up later. And yeah, I totally forgot about
it. In the movie, they play it like he's really a lot younger than she is.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, in the movie, I felt like he was like 25 and she
right.
looked like she's 50-something. I don't know. But she yeah. died when she's like 49, I think, right?
I thought she was older than that, but maybe not. I'm fuzzy on that.
49, and I think he was, the guy he was playing mm-hmm. was like 42 or something. He's like 5 or 6 years young. I mean, it's not normally, you wouldn't, you know, she wasn't robbing the cradle or anything, any jeans on this guy.
Excuse me. Yeah, that's what it looked like, though.
yeah. So, I mean, when I looked it up afterwards, I was like, how old is he? Wait a minute. And then I thought the same thing. I was like, well, maybe she was older than I thought. Maybe she was 59 when she died. And I looked, no, she was 49. So it's like, yeah,
they were
like
so young.
5 or 6 yeah. years apart in age. But anyway, they could have done that piece better.
Yeah, that's true. Because it felt also because of that age difference. Me not remembering there was that last husband. And I'm like, what is this? He's going to take advantage of her? No, he actually apparently loved her. So.
Yeah.
But it came off kind of creepy at first, so I was like, the same with Stacy when she was talking about you. I'm like, you know this guy Judy, like, who is this guy, like, what's he want from you?
Well, it makes sense, we wouldn't know him much. I mean, he just showed up in the last 6 weeks of her life, got married to her, so it just shows how messed up her life was too. And then I thought the movie did a good job with her, with showing that she was trying to do the things that she was supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
but so messed up in her head and everything, it was so hard for her to mm-hmm. do those things and be on every night. It definitely showed that some nights they almost, well, it showed them throwing things at her and things, which mm-hmm. I assume really happened, but
apparently it did. Yeah.
But then other nights they would love her and she would give them a performance that mm-hmm. was where I could see the people leaving and going, that was the best concert I've seen in my entire life. And sure. and I think that's probably pretty accurate. Probably you saw both. So
crazy. Well, and that's the thing, because I was so, that was one of the moments, there's a few, but that was a moment that I kind of teared up, because I'm like, did that actually happen? Because I'm thinking, no way that happened. Because even though she was having issues, or she may have put on a bad show or came on late, it's Judy Garland, like, they were there because they left her almost more than we do here.
Throwing things at her that you thought that probably didn't. Yeah, I was thinking the same
thing. It happened.
I was going, okay, I could see people getting up and leaving or something because she's obviously way off tonight, or even somebody even booing or something.
Sure.
But I can't see a whole audience do it or them. Also, where do people get, they just carry food around in their pockets to throw at people?
It was a dinner. Yeah, like I went, that was the very first thing I looked up because I was just horrified, and that actually happened. Wow. They threw, they said dinner rolls and glasses at her, wow. like drinking glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
I, and I, it's just heartbreaking because she was, you know, I don't think she was a diva per se. I think she gets shown that way sometimes because of her issues, but she was a sick person. She had like chemical dependencies, like from childhood.
Yeah.
Like she had issues.
It was definitely a tearjerker of a film. There was a number.
Yeah.
I was surprised how many times it had kind of watered me up a little bit. One of the scenes that really got me going was when she came out and pulled it together after she'd already essentially been fired or whatever, and came out and did a couple songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started to get emotional, uh-huh. and the audience could tell. And then they started singing the song with her. And it was, wow.
Yeah, that one I hoped was true. It probably isn't, but I told my best friend's a big Judy fan too. And we used to sing her greatest hits in her bedroom poorly, but we had a lot of fun. But she had seen it before I did, and when I brought that scene up, she's like, I cried so hard. I was like, I did too, because I felt like, and I may cry now, I felt like the people who made that movie, that part was for the fans. They may not have happened in real life, but that part was to reflect, we know how much you love her.
Yes.
And if you were in the audience, you would have done that too. Because how do you, I think now people are much more forgiving and understanding. And I think she, like you said, she was the machine, and to have her falter, even in the place where she never did.
Right.
I like to see the, I guess, the difference between the reaction of how poorly she was treated when it happened and how she would have been treated now.
Yes.
Because there's no way that anybody would have watched somebody like that have that moment, know her background, and not do what they did today, I feel like. And maybe back then it did happen, but there's no proof that I found.
And that movie gave you the feeling of like, it was like going to a restaurant and knowing that at this particular restaurant, sometimes your food is going to be kind of bad and sometimes it's going to be okay. But every once in a while, it's going to be the most delicious food you've had in your entire life. And she would still do it. She was like a semi-functioning, so it's like sometimes it would be, you know.
Right.
And I think it would be interesting from the point of view of they had a number of characters that were fans that would go to see her like almost every night. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how they would feel. They'd be like, oh, she's off tonight. Oh, she's on tonight. This is on.
Right.
Oh, she's on.
So, right. Yeah, because the two men that met her out in the alleyway, they were those fans, or they're just, we've seen you like five times. So they knew that, you know, yeah.
And then she goes to their apartment or whatever, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is such a node. You'd never do this today. This is crazy. And yet they love her, and they,
And I think that was a moment for the fans too, because she meant a lot to the gay community.
Yes.
And she still does. And that's the thing though, she meant so much to so many. She meant the world to the troops overseas in World War II. Because one of the things that always kind of teared me up when I read it and think back on it was they had the posters of, you know, Lana Turner and, you know, Jean Harlow. And they always said, Miss Turner, Miss Harlow, but Judy was Judy.
Judy.
She was the girl. She's the girl that reminded them of the one that they had waiting for when they got back. That's a very special role to play for people. I don't know why I'm emotional because we're talking about you. It's
okay. No, this is great. I mean,
I
win awards for my interviewing. I'm as good as Baba Wawa because I can I get all my interviewees to cry.
Yeah.
That's great.
Right.
So if
the others cried, or am I the only one?
Be, but.
If the others haven't cried, I'm going to be going to feel targeted. No.
You're great.
But no.
But yeah, I think I thought this movie did a really nice job with the balance. You could definitely tell part of it was fan service, but it wasn't so in your face fan. It was appropriate. It was acknowledging the fan base, and I think they deserve to be acknowledged. And I just think this movie was so much better than I thought it was going to be. It exceeded my expectations by far, and how deep it was, mm-hmm. how parts of it were fun. It was a little bit of everything, and it yeah. seemed so real.
True, and I remember my first reaction was I thought there could have been a little more humor, because even when she was miserable, she was funny.
Yes.
And not just in show, apparently. They said that she, you know, in real life, behind the scenes, she was just a very funny person, liked to laugh. And I felt like it got, I mean, it was a heavy story, but
yeah.
it didn't quite always, at least for me, capture kind of the bubblier part of her. But I
agree. Think it would. The only thing I'll say as a caveat to that, though, it is just the last 6 weeks of her life.
That's true.
So it could be in the last 6 weeks, she just wasn't as right. lively or funny as she was before that. And so I have no idea. Also, honestly, if I was a producer and you were to say, oh, we're going to tell the story of the last 6 weeks of her life, I'd be like, oh, go back, find me a better story about her, because I don't want to hear just about the last 6 weeks of her life. But they mm-hmm. did a great job of it. And
yeah,
I would say anyone who has, if you've listened to our Judy podcast and you like Judy and you enjoy, go see this movie. It's worth renting. And I think, I don't know, it was free on Epix. Last I checked, it was still on Epix, and on Amazon it was like $1 to rent it. So I don't know
if it's
still $1 or not, but certainly worth $1 for your time to see this film.
Yeah, my Redbox had it, and I live in a place that's probably not like a big yeah. Judy musical theater place.
So, right.
They had it.
Well, that's awesome. I'm just so glad we both saw. And I'm so glad this is something that I thought of 2.5 years ago or something, that, oh, when this comes out, we should have a discussion about it. And
actually, yeah, I think you did.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that, because I've had a lot going on, just moved into bought a house and everything. And so it's just been a long, 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 long list of stuff you got to do. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. Just me and some wine and watching Judy. I've been meaning to watch it anyway. Yeah. That's perfect. So thank you for saying, hey, why don't you do that and stop being a hermit and actually talk to people. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
And thanks for coming out and chatting with us. This is just so cool to be able to talk to you. So we've covered almost everything I wanted to cover. We talked about how you got into the podcast, how you got into old time radio, and just drew. Oh, there's one thing I'll throw your way, just for future reference. If you ever feel like you want to do podcasts again and things, I was listening to one of yours where you're talking, and you said one of your favorite shows ever was Suspense or something.
And
I was
thinking,
it'd be cool for you to just I had you guys do Suspense for a while. You did a number of episodes of Suspense.
Yes.
But they were, I pretty much was throwing you all the female lead ones. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be fun for you to just do whoever turns up. And
Suspense.
Yeah. Well, it's just kind of cool because it could be Cary Grant. It could be, but they're pretty much all big name stars. And, and getting your insights into them and things would be fun.
Love that. Yeah. I really would. Yeah.
So if you're comfortable doing some more podcasts, then feel free. But that's what I would suggest you do next would be maybe finish. There's like 5 Judys left.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Yeah.
But then maybe switch gears to Suspense and do that, because I think you would enjoy those and there'd be lots
always.
To do with the audience. Yeah.
Always. I love Suspense.
Yes.
And so I love like the Twilight Zone type stuff. You know, I just like that older, kind of more thrillery type thing.
Well, thrillery. They have huge name stars. Like Judy was on there only once. And
I know.
You and I were both like, no, more than once. But it's okay. The one she's on there is good.
Yeah.
And it's just the hearing a star in a performance you've never heard them do before.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not from any film, they're not any, they're written specifically for those shows, and just hearing Cary Grant do a new thing instead of watching him in Suspicion for the 47th time,
or
Jimmy Stewart and something, all these films are great, but it's just to hear something new that they've done or new to you is pretty cool. So
it really was, I absolutely loved. I think that was the first time I heard Lucille Ball probably do anything other than for show, right. But then also a couple of her movies where it was, you know,
yeah,
yours, ours, and theirs, or whatever.
Yours, mine, and ours, yeah. Whatever.
Thank you. Stacey, if she hears this, she'll be like, watch that again. Anyway.
Cheaper by a half dozen or something, I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, on Suspense, it was just, she just got to be kind of this tough girl in a weird situation. Oh, it was just interesting. Like you say, it's nice to hear them go, and that's why I like radio. The shows that I started listening to, I'm like, this is really fun, because it just gave that either half hour to an hour of them to just do something different. It didn't cost a lot in production. They just had to show up and use their talents, and sound effects took care of the rest.
You can see why Judy and Jimmy Stewart and so many of the actors from the movies will say they loved to do radio, because you know, you get a movie part and you're dealing with that movie and the producers and the director and you're filming, and it's a year, you know, can be a year of your life taken up by this thing.
Sure.
Whereas you're invited to do Suspense, you go show up, probably some of you show up in the morning or something, do a read through of the thing, and then just do it and you're done. And yet as an actor, it's a challenge to do. You all you have to do is your voice. You don't have to worry about your look or anything. I would think it'd be hugely refreshing for an actor to be able to do that. Just like us, when we get together, like you're saying, when you do the podcast, sometimes you do an intro, it's like something you can do fairly quickly and yet feel good about and feel like, boy, I hope somebody gets something out of this. I got a lot out of it, or it helps, you know.
Yeah, it's fun. And I thought it was such a great point that you made about how Judy sounds on radio shows, because she's technically, I would think, she feels like she's on a stage. And in some cases, it's a live audience, and she really was.
Right.
And there is no better, more natural place that anybody has ever been than Judy Garland on a stage.
Yes.
And I think that there's a bit of a freedom there, too, where, especially if there wasn't an audience, where all of that junk about her looks, or like you said, Cary Grant, known to be the swoony, handsome guy, leading man, whatever, none of that matters when you can't see their face.
Right.
They just have to be a person that they aren't in real life. And I would think, like you said, it's hugely refreshing to be that way.
Yeah.
To just sink entirely into a different character.
Yeah. I think it's wonderful. And I mean, some actors, I'm starting to really like, I've been listening to Raymond Burr, who of course is Perry Mason and Ironside, but he, in his radio work, because he did quite extensive radio work for a short period of time. I mean, he was in radio probably from 52 to 58, you know, and that was sort of it. But what I was impressed with was he had a radio show. It kind of got canceled, but it was a good radio show and with great writers. And it's neat to hear him in a part, recurring part. He plays a captain in the cavalry, and we air that on one of my podcasts, and it's called Fort Laramie. It's great. But right after that, he gets the role of Perry Mason, and so he goes and is doing Perry Mason. But what I was so impressed at, because he said before he got the role, he told people he worked with, oh, I'm going to try and invite you, you know, have you guys on for guest roles. And he did do that. He followed through with that. He also said, I don't want to lose touch with radio. I want to keep doing radio. And he did in seasons up until the demise of radio, essentially. He came back and he would do episodes of Suspense and episodes of these radio shows while he's doing Perry Mason. And this isn't today. They did 39 episodes every year of Perry Mason. That's insane. A season now, a regular season of a regular show is 22 episodes.
Right.
But most shows are like 10 or 15 now with streaming.
Now, yeah.
And it's like, can you imagine him working himself 39 episode hours of television that he does a year, and then goes and says, oh, I'll come on the weekend and I'll do one of your Suspense episodes. And it's like, that's pretty cool that the guy wanting to do them that much. And
39 a year, geez.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? I would never have thought they went that high, but if you look, they did. I, They never hit 40, but they hit 39 and, you know, 39, 37, 38, right in that time, right in that frame, depending on the year. But my God.
But to love it that much to work it in.
Yeah. I think it's great. But anyway, so, but I think we'll probably end it there unless you have anything else you want to talk to us about Judy or anything.
No, I greatly enjoyed it though. I'm glad you, decided to do this. I love how you got me on camera saying, yeah, I'd love to do suspense intros. Like you got it recorded. I'm much easier to pin down now thanks to the quarantine and I have my own house and like I live alone. So it's just, it's very easy to pin me down and get me to commit to stuff now. So.
It's just an idea. It's no stress.
No, I'd love to.
Many as you want, but anytime in the future, if you haven't heard from me and we haven't talked to each other in 5 years and you say, you know what, I feel like doing an episode, just email me and say, hey, I want to do a suspense or something. You are good, golden, anytime.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Just a blessing to this podcast, to me. If nothing else ever comes of this, the fact that I did all the Jack Benny intros, seven or whatever of them, a huge thing that I can go, hey, that was an accomplishment I made and that made me feel real good. But along with that accomplishment is what you've done with Judy and just the presentations you've done. They're delightful to listen to. Every time I play one, you know, I don't always listen to them anymore because they play four or five times through now. But I'll listen to one and I'll hear something and I'll hear you talk about Bing Crosby and his the denim tuxedo or the
Canadian tuxedo.
Canadian tuxedo. That's a great story about his Canadian tuxedo.
I have Canadian in-laws. I had to, like, when I saw that, I was like, that's hilarious. Like, yes. I have to put that in. This made me laugh. That's the thing. I tried to, at least, and that's how I tend to approach anything. I try to just, if I find it amusing, then I'm probably going to share it.
I love that. That's a great way to do it. And you do it over and over again. And you come at things from different angles than I would think. You don't just sort of say, oh, here's a show. She did this. She was in this movie years ago. But you really come at it and you say, here, I didn't think I would enjoy this as much as the movie. But when I listen to it, the radio, this is what it does differently than the movie. You compare and contrast.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you. Cause I would watch the movie usually, or had already watched the movie. I had a huge 2-week Judy Garland binge, there were several I hadn't seen. There were several I had, but, and then I would get excited to see them kind of come up on like, how in the world would they interpret that? It was something that was very kind of visually based, like The Wizard of Oz is visually based, but it has a whole story behind it. And some of her other movies, though, I felt like they relied a lot on the visuals and the music. And I'm like, well, how do you make a whole program out of that? And they just find ways. It was just interesting to see how they would tweak a story to make it work.
It's interesting sometimes with some of the stories to go, how are they going to take an hour and a half or 2-hour movie and make it 30 minutes? Because some of them, they're really condensing it down depending. I mean, Lux was an hour, but a lot of the shows she was on were a half hour. And so and they pull it off. I mean, they do a pretty good job of figuring out what to edit out, telling the story. And I love about old time radio. You just never know. You're always amazed at how they can pull this off to such quality.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, there is a quality to it that I think there was obviously, but it feeds into the whole experience of it's live, and to know that, to be reminded of it being live, much like I'm a fan of Carol Burnett, to have those moments where they do break or they do have the giggle or they do, like Judy and Bing and Bob Hope, like you're saying, they always had at least one or two of those moments where it's just the wall is broken and you reminded that they are performers. And but it's just I just love, I feel like those moments of imperfection show how much time, effort, and quality you're getting out of these shows. I feel like they put so much talent into them that they could afford the occasional slip up, and it
yes.
somehow enhances the experience rather than detracts from it.
Well, the I one love that always comes across to me is the Judy when Judy's on Thanksgiving with Bing, and they're talking about him looking at her eyes, but they're supposed to be talking about looking at the barrel of the gun that she's got down the barrel of a gun, and she's like, "You're not looking; those aren't my eyes. You're not looking at my eyes. You're looking down my." And then she's supposed to say barrel of the gun, but she like doesn't say it right, and then the right. audience all thinks he's looking down her shirt, and she
right.
and the whole start cracking. I mean, it's
yeah.
hilarious and totally right. unintentional, but it's just the way it was sort of written and the way they yeah. delivered lines and messed it up, and they're like, "Oh, this is not what we're supposed yeah. to be saying in radio." Say you're looking down my shirt. Those aren't my eyes. You're looking down my
shirt. That's the thing that I feel like they had that kind of trust with each other and that background and friendship that they could, you know, toe up to that line, even if it was accidental and neither one were going to be pushed over. They yeah. would kind of catch each other, but run with it at the same time. Like they,
yeah.
they would just cover each other's basically mistakes and make them better.
Yeah.
Somehow make the whole experience better. Yeah, I really.
It's just amazing that they were never like in a film together or anything. I mean, I think Bing and Judy would have been an interesting match. But I guess it's like, how do you, their age different. They couldn't really be a couple necessarily. And yet you don't want to have her. Is she going to play his daughter? Is she going to what do you do? And so I guess it would be difficult.
There was talk, and I'd have to get the source on that. I remember, I don't know if I made it into one of the intros. I have like this master list of like Judy stuff,
yes.
like, so I don't repeat myself, which I'm sure I do. But
no, really don't very much.
So. Oh, okay. Thanks. That's because there's a master list where I yes. like search it before I talk about it. But I don't know how far along it got, but they had at one point talked of doing one of the road movies with her.
Oh.
And that could have been how she got worked into it. So.
That's so frustrating to hear. I love the road movies.
I know.
If there was one with her in it, it would be like an all-time classic. It would just
yeah.
be, it couldn't, how could it not be? And
that's it's so interesting you said that. Because that's one of my frustrations with her too, is I get frustrated when I see Judgment at Nuremberg and you see this fantastic actress. The clock is very good if you wanted to see her act.
Yes.
But then you have the musical talent, and then you have, she's funny in a lot of her films, but the thing about the radio shows that I loved is you see how, like, if there were more options for women back then,
yes.
Lucille Ball started to break that down, to have her be the pretty girl who could sing and who could dance and who could act, but also be super, super funny. Like yes. if they would have just, she today would have had that moment as well, but she could have been as yes. one of the road trip people. She could have been that slapstick, zany kind of thing that I guess they're not really slapstick, but she could have been one of the comedians, and she just wasn't allowed to be.
And I agree. That's one of the things that what you just said ties in so much to another frustration. So much frustration with me and Judy is missed opportunities mm-hmm. in studios, missed opportunities with them not recognizing her talent, but also her missed opportunities of these movies that she was cast in and was even like started to film and then would drop out of the movie. And you're going,
yeah,
that would be part of her canon as these great
yeah.
films. I mean, there were films that were wonderful films even without her when they mm-hmm. replaced her, but you go, if you put her in that part, you're just like, oh, it would have been so much better. And it's got to be, what, 4 or 5 films that she dropped out of while they were filming them or something. It's an amount. And
yeah.
out of those, probably 3 of them are fairly big films that you're going, oh, that would have been a classic. But
sure. Yeah, because there's one that I always think about that. Man, she would have been good in that. And I'm blanking on which one it was.
There's one that's Get Your Gun, Annie Get Your Gun, right?
Yeah, she would have been good in that.
That she sure. was in that, and they even filmed part of it, and then they took her, and then she just couldn't pull it together, and so they took
yeah.
her out and put in a different actress. And
yeah.
And it's a solid movie that I've watched a few times now, But if Judy was in it, it would be, like I say, a classic, and we all know about it, and everybody would watch a lot more than this. I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, she's got, what, of her classics, she's probably got A Star Is Born, mm-hmm. Easter Parade, Wizard of Oz.
Me in St. Louis?
Yeah. And those are so she's got these four outstanding films, but she can easily have 8 or 10 or,
And
it's not her fault, really. It's you're frustrated is that the studio, they damaged her and made it where you couldn't pull it off in some of those films, and that's too bad.
And the thing about that, too, even if you took away the actual abuse part of it, she was so underutilized by the studio because they pigeonholed her into what they thought she, they knew what the talents were, they knew what the public was used to seeing, what they would pay to see. And that's what it was. It could not, she could not convince them to let her do more. And so something like The Clock, where she, that you, going back to what you said, there are some movies that I love only because she's in them. And I don't know that I would love The Clock as much if it were a different actress. But I was so fascinated watching her in that movie where she's playing, it's a very, I think, like, based in a 24-hour day romance, and it's very melancholy, and she's just allowed to be in her own skin and just breathe.
And she doesn't sing at all, I don't believe in that
film. No, yeah. And it's funny, and it's sweet, and it's very much just a romantic kind of, almost an experimental movie for her, and it wasn't a huge success, and so get back to singing, Judy, like, because it's, anytime she tried to step out of that, if it didn't just make huge amounts of money, they just wouldn't let her keep doing it.
Well, they knew that they could make all this money from her, but the sad part is, without her, they would have made that film, it probably would have done a little worse than her having her in it, so she definitely makes the films do better, but just not as stellar as they know she can make it if they put her in the right film, and so what it tends the studios to do is just keep steering her in that same thing. Oh, you do a musical with her in, a big scale, this will be great, and she can pull this off with some humor mixed in, and it, that's, and where she's the girl next door character, that'll make us bucks, and it just has to be on that.
Yeah, because I remember I was watching a lot of Brendan Fraser as a 90s kind of thing, but I was having a moment where I just wanted to recapture my youth, and I was watching a lot of him, and I remember, I think, talking about him at one point, because he, you know, he was somebody who kind of veered off, but at one point he was doing adventure films. He was doing
The Mummy,
very dramatic roles. Yeah, exactly. And The School Ties was one of his first and more iconic roles. There was, and he's very funny, and he did a lot of campy things. And I feel like that's kind of the career she could have had. And then, but I was also thinking when you were pointing out some things about, like, Jennifer Lawrence is somebody who kind of started off in the huge franchise movies. She does romantic comedies that are more mainstream, and then she'll just go and just kind of cherry pick these little independent movies where she just experiments. People may hate them, she doesn't care, she just wanted to try something different because she's got the talent and the clout to do it. She can. That's the kind of career that Judy Garland missed out on because of the era that she was in.
Is sad because you're right, that's exactly what I was going to point out. So many stars now that are big names, George Clooney is that kind of folk, they do a big movie and then they follow it up with a little independent movie, then a big movie, then a little movie, just to keep themselves fresh and to keep things going, and the studios allow that to happen. Back then they just didn't allow that to happen, and they did, I think she would have been much happier, and she would have produced much better for them over time, and they would have got more big films out of her, and forcing her to only do those big films and not allowing her to do any of the little pieces, character pieces that I think she would have enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
Like The Clock, and it's just too bad.
It is. Yeah. There's always a pinch of sadness there.
there is.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, her radio career, unlike her movie career, is rewarding throughout, and she does a beautiful job throughout the radio career, and there was no pressure on her or anything like that, and she does do a wide variety of things. She does do The Clock, in on radio. She gets a chance to do Cinderella on radio. That's kind of cool.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Cinderella. And there's a number of roles that she does that are, and then she gets to be with Bing a number of times. There's hours and hours and hours of her with Bing. And we don't, if you only expose yourself to the movies, you never get a chance to enjoy that relationship that they have. Whereas you and I, unlike so many people, there's probably very few people that have listened to as much Judy with Bing as you and I have heard. And it's just delightful relationship that they have. And it's delightful the way that he came and helped her, and he was there when she needed him, and they were there for each other. I believe one of her performances was just a very short time after she tried to kill herself, and she had still had a cut on her neck and things, but came and performed, and he prepped the audience for that, and that he wanted them to really embrace her, and they really did, and that's a beautiful story. I mean, that right there, her relationship with Bing and that arc of her, here you go, Hollywood, if you're listening, that would be a really cool movie. That would be a great movie. And
a chance
to show Bing in a different light, have them how they interact together, but show how he helps her through that time. I think that would be a delightful film.
That's brilliant. You know what? Yeah, that's a very good idea. And that's the thing. I think you can make 40 different biographies of her life, but the Bing Judy thing is actually something I really have enjoyed, because you know, sometimes when you don't grow up as a kid and obsess over details about certain cultural things, like I knew who Bing Crosby was, I knew who she was, but in my mind they never crossed because I never saw them in a movie together. And so the fact that I saw that, I'm like, why are we showing the Bing Crosby show so much? When I first saw the list, I'm like, oh goodness. It's because that's how their friendship was, and she filled in and helped him out at times when he had to leave when his wife was sick. And but yeah, that would be, and I think that's what I enjoy about those, because you hear that friendship there, and it makes you giggle almost, like you're kind of part of an in joke or something, because you start hearing the banter, and you know their history enough at that point that you can see why she's laughing, or you can see why he's just. He frequently sounds amused by her, which I think is different than when somebody makes you laugh. Like when you're amused by somebody, you think they're adorable.
Yes.
It's just, you can hear that in him, that he just really adored her. And I think he's kind of got a bum rap a little bit. And I don't know much about his personal life. I just know that growing up that he was always, there's a lot of the stigma or the jokes, unfortunately. Jokes about child abuse or whatever, but he was very much a champion for a lot of people in the industry, African-American musicians that he thought should be equal billing to him. He was innovative in what he did, and he really contributed a lot to modern culture.
So diverse, you would never get that today, and wonderful that he did that.
And
the two of them together, to me, it's like the uncle that you always wish you had, and the cousin that's delightful that you always wish you had, and then them together, and just the room just lights up when they're in there, and you're part of this family, and you just enjoy them and revel in it. And it's so insane that just sound, just these recordings from decades ago, can transport you, and you're there with them and enjoying every moment. Now, it helps that the recordings now are in that we found, and that Bing had the Memorex tape or whatever that he did, and it's just such beautiful sound on those things, that they do sound like they're recorded yesterday, some of them, and that helps some too. You didn't mention it much in your intros, but some of them, other shows, much bad quality. You're like, oh man, I really have to strain to hear this thinking, and I think the song came across well, but it was like throughout the whole thing.
If it starts off, particularly if it starts off and gets better, I think I try to point that out, like just write it out or skip ahead. Like it gets better.
That often is the case. It's often the first 5 minutes that are bad, and then nothing.
But
they're just gorgeous from the beginning, and
that speaks to, he was innovative, and he strove for quality and perfection. They said even with his vocal ability, he would try to sing and adapt his voice and learn new techniques. And he was always learning and trying to push it forward.
I like to think that Bing and Judy are somewhere up there looking down on you and I and saying, good job, guys. You've helped our legacy out a little bit and
yeah.
Maybe put us out there a little more than we would be otherwise. And I hope that they like that.
And there are people, there's just here and there where I watch these documentaries, and I think one of them was Bob Ross. And I said, I would really hope that somebody like him, who still to this day, long after he's died, brings so much joy to people that he gets to wherever he is, and I assume it's a very good place, that he can look down and see that joy that he brought people and know how much was loved. And I hope, like you're saying, I hope it's the same thing for her, where she can see that, it was too much of a price that she had to pay to give us what she did, but that her talent is still being celebrated long after she's been gone.
Agreed.
And not just celebrated, I think it's a very emotional attachment people get to her, because I feel like she just has a way of singing a song and playing a role and just being herself in interviews that just kind of the sincerity, I guess, punches right through and just refreshing.
It is. It truly is. Anyway, I think I'll close it there. So thank you so much for coming. This has been delightful. Sure. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. I really did.
Thank you.
And I hope anyone viewing this, if you're going to see it, enjoys it. And I hope the people that hear you enjoy it as well. So I just feel like this is one of my crowning achievements, is talking to you and the things that you've done. So thank you.
You're so nice. Thank you.